The university tower chimes ring in another session of Ask the Professor, the radio show on which you match wits with University of Detroit Mercy professors in a very unrehearsed session of questions and answers. I'm your host, Matt Mayo, and let me introduce our panel to you today. On my right, from the Department of Philosophy, Professor Marty Lever.
I am that person.
This is going to be a great show. This is going to be awesome. Boy. I'm very, very excited. Thanks for coming, Marty.
Thanks for having me.
How has the term been treating you?
Pretty well. Pretty well.
Good.
We're midterm, so I'll see.
Yes.
Yeah, they had to write on me.
That's right. Oh. That's right. I signed an article that Beth had written.
Very cool.
Let's see if they can capture the essence of...
And then tear it apart properly.
That's right.
Like good little philosophers in training.
Right.
Well, to Professor Lever's right from the College of Creative Studies in Detroit, Michigan, it's Professor Dave Chow.
Pleasure to be here as always. It's just one of those days. That's all. It's just been a long week. Mm-hmm. I've got midterms, just got done with it, and I'm done for the week, so.
Have a good weekend then.
It's time
It'll
to
be relaxing.
Now I got to go back to work after this, so.
Oh, okay.
My other jobs.
Well, let's see how long we can make this show go.
Good Lord. Well, I'll manage.
Across the table from me, from the Department of Economics, is Professor Mike DiGiovanni.
Pleasure to be here.
Glad to have you back, Mike.
Wouldn't rather be anywhere else.
Excellent. Excellent. To his right, from the Department of Communication Studies, is Professor Jason Roach.
I'm waving.
He's
to
waving again.
Waving again.
You guys were ripping on me for that last time. Thank you for the reminder. I've got a lot of midterms to grade now, Dave. Thank you.
Sorry about that.
It's that time.
Continuing in a counterclockwise manner, to the right of Professor Roach is Professor Chuck Hockett from AV&IT.
Howdy, howdy, howdy.
Glad to have you back, Chuck.
Thank you.
And last, but way, way, no, certainly not least, also from the Department of Philosophy, Professor Beth Olchak.
Matt doesn't want to get flogged with rubber bands.
Yeah, no,
that's
I do
why
not.
Over here.
I see those rubber bands in your hand. I'm getting nervous.
I wore a cup this week just in case.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, that was TMI. Okay, that was an overshare.
Too much information.
Well, this is a program where you can send us questions regarding protective equipment, midterms, whatever you want. You can send the questions to us in a number of ways. You can email us at atp@udmercy.edu. You can reach us on the web at udmercy.edu/atp. You can fax the professors at 313-993-1144. And ladies and gentlemen out there in listener land, we have some very, very interesting emails from listeners that we want to bring up. And before I go any further, we have a late joiner to the panel, interim dean of the College of Liberal Arts and Education, Roy Finkenbein.
All his economic answers will be better than mine.
Good to be here.
Well, what we got here, Roy and the rest of the panel, is a interesting little subset of clearing out the old email box here. There is atp@udmercy.edu, and a number of very interesting, very, very recent emails sent to the show. We figured we'd just read a few comments and probably make funny comments based on those. Mike Grimes of Saline, Michigan, a former listener, Sunday nights in the 80s, and now a podcast follower, just wanted to stay in touch, working on some questions in my head.
Send them in.
Mm. Interesting.
I have to get out of your head for us to answer.
What a great show, says Mike Sherman, Bloomfield Township, Michigan. I've been listening since 1985. Pretty good, pretty good. Cindy, no last name, Bakersfield, California. What is a tipple? No answer given. There you go.
Tipple.
Please send us the... We're not smart enough to know the answers to a lot of these sorts of things.
Tipple
you
of the
us,
iceberg.
Yeah, exactly. Mike Butler of Detroit. Though I live in Detroit and the show is available on two stations, I would love to have ATP on every station in the country. I found the show again through the iTunes store. I listen daily to old shows. I regret that all the shows are not available. Every George Pickering show should be run in an everlasting loop on a satellite. This show is not one of the most popular and widely distributed in the country is a gross injustice in a state and country full of gross injustices.
Wow.
Viva ATP to the barricades.
Wow. So we thought the unemployment rate was bad, you know, now...
And listen to this for the space-time continuum from Steve Price in Portland, Oregon. Very recent, about a month ago, he sent this in. Used to listen to the show on a local Portland station, KEX, I think. Googled it recently, just on a lark, and discovered this site. Have listened to all the 09 broadcasts.
Oh, good.
disconcerting to learn of Kathy Bush's passing before ever hearing her as a host on the show. Mm. What a vibrant, witty, warm person she was. You must miss her terribly. We do. Mm-hmm. Yep. I hope you continue the show. Way back in the day and now, the show makes the university sound like a warm, fun, and nurturing place.
Pretty the pressure now. We got to follow that.
Yeah, I don't know how you're going to, you know, follow up with stuff like that, but I'll tell you, we've got a few things. I figured before we get into the hardcore stuff, these are people who actually sent in questions with responses.
No, so that's
probably
ones,
a good place
right?
to start. What is the only other element on the periodic table whose solid phase is less dense than its liquid phase? Sorry.
Are we?
Is that from you?
No, it is not. It is from Mike Gutierrez of Milford, Michigan.
Do we get some?
Well,
like a grading phase. Like, do we know if we're?
No pun intended.
If we answer 20 questions right,
the first place to go, I think, would be what is the only other element on the periodic table whose solid phase is less dense than its liquid phase? I'm guessing the first one is mercury because it's the only element that is in its elemental form a liquid at room temperature. But what's the other one?
Ooh.
Let's see. It is the active ingredient in Pepto-Bismol, and it's a metal.
Bismuth.
Bismuth is the answer.
Ooh, wow.
See?
Wow.
Beth comes Sing right the out of the woodwork there. Right out of the woodwork.
Taking a lot of Pepto-Bismol, actually.
You're picking up right where you left off last week. You're good.
Beth, you must have the Theo Gray periodic table app on your iPad. The one in the commercial?
I don't have an iPad.
Oh, well, that might have something to do with
it. I've never sent a text message.
I love how I loved that app so much, and I don't have any Apple products or the ability to have, I have a dumb phone instead of a smartphone, that I went and found out it was actually in book form. So I bought the book, and I'm so proud of myself to have bought the book of the app before I would ever even consider buying an app. You know, Dale Boyle of Heath, Texas writes in which Olympics did George Patton achieve a position but never participated?
George,
great question.
Patton, the World War II general.
Yeah. The World War II general.
Well, must it would have to be pre-World War II.
Yeah, that's a good start.
So I'm guessing 20s?
1912?
A little bit earlier.
Ooh, 12, 16?
1916 Summer Olympic Games.
Rowing.
They were canceled because of World War I. What was he going to do? What was he going to play?
Shooting?
That's a little stereotypical.
Skeet shooting with a howitzer.
No, he was in the pentathlon.
Oh, really?
Wow.
Pretty amazing.
Was he a five-star general?
Oh. Mr. Greek Roots over here. Huh?
That's very good.
All
Was
right,
Greek
we have
gray?
Okay. Unbelievably...
You still have some, sorry.
We have a huge set of questions here from Adrienne McMahon in Simpsonville, South Carolina. She writes, I love your podcasts. I've only been listening to your podcast for 2 years, but I've listened to every single old show that is available back to 05.
Wow.
Thanks for the entertainment and sometimes the education. You know,
that's
I think my students just said that to me the other day.
That was this morning.
I believe we are all over the map with these, and if Jeff were here, he'd say we need to get a certain number right. So here we go.
The percentage.
Who developed printing on paper? And I believe she is speaking about
a culture.
Yes.
Egyptians?
Papyrus
Sumerians?
Printing on paper. She has the Mesopotamians around 3000 BC. We have record.
Okay.
I suppose the record would be in rock that they were using paper, or was it on? I don't know.
What about scissors?
Yeah.
Well, we got rock and paper on there. What
good point.
If it's not
good
written,
point.
It's prehistory, right?
I suppose.
Isn't that the.
Yes. Yeah.
They had, what's the term? What
kind of paper did they have?
It's cuneiform for paper. Yeah.
Dunder Mifflin paper.
Yeah, Dunder Mifflin.
Dunder Mifflin.
When were schools in the United States of America desegregated?
1954.
1954 is actually correct, Beth. You
legally,
remember the date?
Yeah.
That's always right.
April, when did Brown come down? April 1954.
He's nodding his head, yeah.
Very good. Where was the world's first kindergarten?
Germany.
And when was it first opened?
France?
What year?
Wow.
Yeah,
Germany sounds, because the word is German.
Mm-hmm.
Kindergarten. That's decent. Mm-hmm.
The kids in the garden.
And
what
when?
Year do you think?
Hansel and Gretel.
Pre Civil War.
1835.
Oh man,
1837. You ask your history.
Roy didn't say anything about him attending it.
Actually, I didn't attend kindergarten.
Wow. I was in transition from Medicine Hat. So.
Well, and now you. I was talking to Marty earlier. Now the kids are in kindergarten until 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Yeah, it's not the sort of half day thing that
some systems have all day and some
they work harder than I do.
I flunked kindergarten. I cried every day. They called my mother, take this kid home.
Yeah. He'll never amount to anything.
He can't eat paste.
As always, it reminds me of an episode of The Simpsons where during kindergarten they were evaluating their ability to go Ivy League. It's like, you know, left out M, not college material.
Well, we have to treat Homer and Bart with a newfound respect being a Catholic college.
True.
Now the Vatican has deemed them respectable.
Now, I'm going to tell a story that's going to get me in a lot of trouble over the airwaves, but I'm going to tell it anyway. My son is in first grade at a local area parochial grade school. We go to the book fair. It's his birthday this week. He requests the Simpsons comic book. We are immediately informed by the mother running the event that they don't stock the Simpsons titles at this Catholic school's book fair.
They will.
Outrage.
And even though I wasn't willing to get into it right then, I did mention that for the last 22 years, it's the only sitcom family that goes to church every week. That's the bottom line. However, saying that they're Catholic is pushing it just a little bit.
Isn't the church
especially after the episode where they made fun of wildly of Catholicism.
No, what is... I think there is a name for the... For the religion that they
have. Oh, yeah, they're Presbyterian.
Yeah,
that's
right. Yes,
exactly. What's next, Family Guy?
Yeah, exactly.
I'm converting to the Church of Fonz.
How do you get from Presbyterian to their Catholic?
Well, I believe they're referencing a certain episode that was, for the record, if you are Catholic or even if you're not, particularly hilarious where, you know, Bart remarks, you know, let's go Catholic, free crackers and booze, and it goes on from there up to the point where Marge is afraid for the souls of Bart and Lisa because in her dream she envisions heaven as having a Protestant side and a Catholic side. And the Protestant side, they're playing croquet and V-necks. On the Catholic side, they're drinking a lot and beating the snot out of each other. So,
but actually,
Jesus was on the Catholic side.
Oh, we know from watching South Park that what you need to be to get into heaven is Mormon.
That's right.
Like, Mormon was the answer we were looking for.
It's right. It's right. It's true. When, I suppose we're talking about when and which was the first Western university established? What was it? When was it established?
Western civilization.
I believe we're talking Western civilization.
Western Reserve. Oh.
Oh, it was the 13th century? No, it was actually earlier.
Yes. 1158 is what they have here.
12th
so
century.
Wow. Okay. Where did,
think a sandwich meat.
Bologna.
Bologna, oh. Yeah. Very
oh,
good.
Oh, okay. University Italy makes Bologna.
It wasn't Reuben. So
University of Salon. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, what is their team in Bologna?
The lunch meat.
Go sausage.
It probably sounds better in Italian.
Can you imagine the team mascot?
It's called like the Kowalski mascot.
Well, and they call their bologna something different.
Something different.
Mortadella.
Yeah. Mortadella, yes, exactly.
Mortadella. It charges twice as much.
What was the name of the first American university, and in what year was it chartered?
William and Mary?
I would think Harvard.
Harvard University.
16-something.
Ooh, it's kind of freaking me out. It was chartered on October 28th, a date close to the hearing.
1689?
1636. I'm giving you the first two digits.
That's way earlier than I thought.
Before the Revolution.
Very well done.
And then you got Yale, and then you get William and Mary.
There you go.
Wow, okay.
Wow, this is a multi-parter for sure. How many colleges and universities are there in the United States of America? For the record, this includes four-year colleges and community colleges, but excludes online entities such as Phoenix and commercial ones such as DeVry.
Billions?
Well, thousands.
It's got to be
please.
Thousands.
40,000. 40,000.
Yeah. I'm going to say around 3,500.
I've got 4,216.
That's close enough.
That's it. And as we think about that number, we're going to have to take a break.
It's an Ask the Professor flashback.
Indeed, that's right. On my right, from the Department of Religious Studies, in fact, the very chair of that department, Professor George Pickering.
Hey, pleasure to be here, as always.
Oh, it's always a pleasure to have you here.
George, are you saved?
What makes you think that's any of your business?
You're good.
Now, see?
It's
telling you how the pros handle
it. It paralyzes all powers of retort.
It does.
Do it.
That's
George.
Right. Bang. That's
how
it.
How to handle bad questions.
What a guy.
That's good.
And that voice you just heard, sitting to George's right, from the Department of History and the Assistant Dean of the College of Liberal Arts and Directress, I guess that's the right word,
whoa,
isn't it? Or, well, the person who runs the Learning Center.
Top chick.
Top chick.
Top chick. There we go.
Professor Kathy Bush.
Hello, Edwin.
Hello, Kathy.
Tough chick, too.
Yeah, well.
No, but you know, there is a story that reminded me of that exchange with Kathy. That Dwight L. Moody was a big revivalist. Late 19th century. And he did walk up to a person on the street and asked him if he was saved one time. And the man said, "It's none of your business." And he said, "Oh, yes, it is." And the man said to him, "You must be Dwight L. Moody."
That's good.
Oh, dear. Super. That's wonderful.
I'm going to have to apologize to our listenership for the number of times I bring up The Simpsons. It's a pathology that will never go away. We were talking about how many colleges there are in the United States of America, 4,216, excluding online universities and commercial colleges. So here's the second part. Which state has the greatest number of those at 399?
Ooh, California.
California,
followed by, with 307, New York. Yeah, and last but certainly not least, because it's third, with 260,
Massachusetts,
Texas. Illinois, Texas. Chicago,
Massachusetts. 50 states, Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania. Yes.
If we talked about cities, Boston would have to be up there, though.
Oh yeah, there's
every block. They
27 or something like that. It's out of control. I just found out the other day Worcester has 11, colleges and schools in it. I'm like, really? Has anybody ever been there?
Anybody have a job crazy. There?
They all work for college.
Obviously, a college town.
Actually, I don't know. I mean,
actually,
that's
College
like,
of Worcester is very good.
Yeah, that's right. That's one of the big ones. But I just pictured it in my mind, not knowing New England is like the size of Southfield or something. You know. What is the oldest surviving English language epic poem?
Epic
Beowulf.
Yeah,
Beowulf.
Venus.
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes. Wow. They say it's
the
about
only one I know.
AD 1000.
Wow. Well, I was thinking
Chaucer.
You had
to memorize it in third grade, right?
Well, I went to an advanced kindergarten.
That's what we missed in kindergarten, right?
Anglo-Saxon kindergarten.
We missed out on the Beowulf and paste.
Looks like we have a little bit of an Anglo-Saxon thread here. In the Canterbury Tales, where were the travelers headed?
To
the first line, isn't it?
Anybody remember?
To a fair? To a joust? To some sort of medieval tournament?
It's not Canterbury.
It's Canterbury.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh.
What were they going to do there, though? They were going to visit the blank.
Renaissance fair.
The zoo.
Strip club.
They were going to the cathedral, Beth. You're absolutely right. But they were going to the cathedral to do something at the cathedral. To visit a shrine.
Great.
I'm still saying we got it right. Apparently, they're going to see the grave of Thomas à Becket.
Mm. Ah.
Because they liked the movie so much?
Yeah, exactly. How many plays did Shakespeare write, excluding poems and sonnets? Because they're not plays, I guess.
Where's Edwin DeWitt?
Yeah, right.
I think like 116.
Way lower.
Can't be
37.
Try
too low.
It's gonna be higher.
Is it?
Good. Right. I'm buying all these things for everyone.
Wow. 37. I thought it was lower than that.
I have no idea. Divinity. I don't know.
I haven't got a lot to see yet, obviously.
Yeah.
And a lot to read.
If you ask me to list some, I probably could only do about 7 or 8. That's pretty embarrassing. What did Davenant, John Dryden, William Wordsworth, and Lord Alfred Tennyson have in common?
They were poets.
They were special kinds of poets.
English poets.
They were definitely English, but they were even specialer than that.
Published?
No, that's too rare.
Oh, okay. Oh,
no,
they were the poet laureates of England.
Does
anybody know who is considered to be the first unofficial poet laureate?
Shakespeare.
No, it was Ben Jonson. I guess he actually got a pension.
Wasn't he a
from the
yeah,
course
say,
in 1605.
If Patton can be
he
in
was
the Olympics.
A fast poet.
He was a very fast poet.
He could write those damn poems in a minute.
Who's the first American poet laureate?
Robert Frost?
Very, very sad. 1985. Ooh. Took us a while to catch up, I guess.
It wasn't Robert Frost.
It was not. However, the name, the first name is held in common with this person.
Robert?
The third largest city in the state of Michigan?
Robert Saginaw?
Grand Rapids?
Robert Lansing?
Lansing,
Kalamazoo?
Robert Warren. Robert Penn.
Oh, okay.
I also learned
Warren. Warren is the third largest city in Michigan.
Yeah, it is. Detroit, Grand Rapids, Warren.
Wow.
By population.
By population.
I've never known that.
Which came first? Ooh, this is a great question.
Chicken.
Oh, there we go. We're done. See you later. The word Scrooge or the Dickens character with that name? I like this question.
I gotta go with the character.
Me too.
Same. Yeah. I'd have to go with that.
I'll say I'll go Scrooge.
You know, it says the character came first with the publication of A Christmas Carol in... actually, it says... it says publication of Christmas Carol in 1943. I believe there may be just a little typo there. The term Scrooge was in full use in dictionaries by 1899. Yes. So this wonderful language that we purport to know how to use, huh?
That's Scrooge.
Who painted The Birth of Venus? Very famous.
Botticelli.
Yeah. Could you give us a year?
No.
Art professor?
No.
Good luck.
Renaissance, so...
1500.
Just guess 37 again.
I have 1482.
Close enough. I can't capture the lightning in a bottle twice.
Whenever I see a question like that, it makes me think of Family Feud, where you know you really are just trying to get at the heart of a poll, meaning that even if the general public gets something incorrect, you're expected to know that. For instance, where's the Eiffel Tower located? Pisa, Italy was the second biggest answer in that poll. It's sort of like, didn't she do everything? Botticelli.
I came in to give my midterm today in my noon class in Brig 17, and written on the board was, contrary to popular belief, George Washington was not a British general, nor was he a Confederate general. Like, yeah, because that's why we put him on the one. Because he's British.
I love it. Well, he was kind of a subject.
Somebody had a history class in here that wasn't.
Was he a subject? Would you say he was a subject of the Empire? I mean,
he was a British officer before.
Yeah.
Until we won.
He's one of us.
Who painted the water lilies? Was it Monet or Manet?
Monet.
Yeah, it was Monet.
Monet.
It's a huge piece, too.
Is it?
Huge. It's huge.
How big is this?
Gorgeous.
It's the size of a wall, if I remember. I think that's the piece. It's huge.
So they're larger than actual scale.
Yes.
Nice. In 1962, that's sort of an odd place to start when we're appraising something. What was the dollar value of the Mona Lisa? I'm guessing it would be a lot more these days.
They had an old world book and they put it together.
There you go.
Priceless. More expensive than I could ever afford.
Yes, that is correct.
So
can you be more specific?
$10.
Do we hear 10, 20, 15?
It's going to be a little higher.
Let's start with 40 million.
It's going to be higher.
In 1962, it's higher.
In 1962, it was higher than
250 million.
We'll split the difference and go with 100 because that's what it was. In 1962.
I wasn't going to go 37 again.
If my scant, we have an economist here. My scant understanding of inflation is proper. We had to have crested a billion a number of years ago.
Oh, that's the professor. Oh,
okay. He's Sarah. And we're talking dollars, not lira, obviously.
Oh, yeah, clearly. There's a dollar sign here, not euros.
But isn't that also one of those situations where if nobody can afford it, it's kind of like useless for price? I mean, if nobody buys it.
Well, is it the sort of thing that should be owned by any one person?
Exactly.
Because if I own it, if I have property rights over it, then I can do something like burn it if I feel like it.
What was she smiling about?
We'll never know.
Indigestion.
A small painting, very small. Yeah.
The Louvre was originally constructed. I'm noticing a trend. The Louvre was constructed for another purpose. What was it? Very famous art museum in Paris.
Oh, the Louvre.
Gotta go to the Louvre.
A Louvre-tory.
It was constructed for
tractor pulls.
A World's Fair.
To be something other than a museum.
Sunday at the Louvre.
Tractor pulls?
No, it was not tractor pulls. It was a little Temple. More, well, maybe less distinguished. It says here that it was a fortress for Philippe Auguste. 1190. That's old stuff.
Wow.
And maybe it's the sort of thing where there could have been like footings at that time where the modern building was built.
It was a go-kart pull then.
Yeah. So I'm looking to the historian here. I'm getting some nods.
What caused the shift? I mean,
good
just
question.
No need for a fortress, or
it's like turning an old real grade estate value into a mini mall or something.
The neighborhood went to pot after that. I thought
another fortress.
According to this question, the full name of famous painter Pablo Picasso contains how many words? Had no idea.
Dave?
I'm
8.
I go 37.
It's one of those really long Spanish names.
It's worked for us before. I have.
It's not 8, and it's not 37, but I can tell you that it's somewhere in between.
Oh, wow. 24.
23.
Whoa.
Picasso was baptized and named for various saints and relatives. His full name is listed as Pablo Diego José Francisco de Paula Juan Nepomuceno María de los Remedios Cipriano de la Santísima Trinidad Clito Ruiz y Picasso.
God, I hope Picasso. He didn't put a monogram on his shirt.
Good Lord. That didn't play in the NFL.
Just imagine having to sign your name a lot of times.
Just imagine sitting through the ceremony.
God, did Giovanni.
I remember when I was associate dean and I would, like, at the end of the day, I would go to the grocery store and have to sign. I was so tired of signing my name. Could you imagine what it would be like if you were?
Well, yesterday we were closing on the sale of my late parents' house, and for the first time in maybe my life, I had to sign, you know, full middle name.
Sure.
And it threw me off because I'm used to doing the Roy Finkenbein thing. Just I have to think about
the
thing,
right?
I looked like a first grader trying to.
Picasso, the Picasso part is from his mother, whose name was Maria Picasso, and his father was named José Ruiz Blasco.
But his buddies all call him Paco.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, buddy.
Hey,
buddy.
Buddy. In 1911, Picasso was accused of stealing what famous work of art?
Ew.
Yeah, I didn't have any idea about this either.
Was it his own?
Yeah.
How many boobs did it have? That's the question.
Not enough, which is why he stole it, right? So he could add a few more.
Was it a Van Gogh?
It was not a Van Gogh.
Right.
It was a Da Vinci.
Ooh. Oh, well, at least he had taste.
Oh, Vitruvian so. Man? Was that
no,
it?
No, no.
Da Vinci.
We're hiding a little bit of information from you. When I say famous work of art, I can narrow it down to a painting again.
Last Supper?
No, not the Last Supper.
Not the Mona Lisa.
Mona Lisa.
Wow.
Picasso and his friend Apollinaire were accused of stealing the work of art from the Louvre and found to be innocent. In January of 19... I'm going to look this up on Wikipedia when I get back to my office. In January of 1917, the painting was returned to the Louvre after being discovered in the false bottom of a trunk stored in under a bed less than 2 miles from the middle of Paris.
Wow.
I heard there was acid on the bottom of the Mona Lisa poured on, somehow got on there and wrecked the painting on the bottom.
Huh.
The original.
Yeah. Unbelievable.
Acid?
Somebody... I don't know if it was this adventure or something else. Yeah, there was some. I don't know if they restored it or
that,
what.
That thing's got miles on it. I know that. It's been all over the place.
Unbelievable. In 2006, a painting sold for $140 million, the highest amount ever paid for a painting. And who was that artist?
Refer back to
1962.
What year was it again, man?
It was 2006. I went right to 19. Fantastic.
Monet.
2006.
It's either Rothko, or
it wasn't a Rothko.
Was it Van Gogh, Starry Night?
It was a more recent artist.
Wyeth?
No,
more recent
pop artist.
You know, I'm gonna show one of my great weaknesses is fine art. Initials JP.
Jackson Pollock.
Jackson.
Oh, okay.
It's a more recent artist, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and involved throwing things at the
and team. Not there a pop artist.
Bizarre
so.
Art. Just throw paint at all.
The painting sold for $2.4 million more than the second highest price sale, which was
Saved by the Bell.
Woman 3 by Willem de Kooning.
Okay.
Very interesting. Wow. I guess we're going to have to say goodbye, Professor Oljar.
Goodbye.
Professor Hocken.
Yeah, that's over.
Professor Roach.
Later.
Professor DiGiovanni.
Hasta la vista.
Professor Chow.
37 again.
Dean Finkenbein.
Good to be here.
Professor Lever.
I guess I'll have more to say next time.
Ask the Professor is transcribed at the facilities of the Briggs Building and the Department of Communication Studies in the College of Liberal Arts and Education at the University of Detroit Mercy's McNichols campus. Ask the Professor is produced and technically directed by Michael Jason, and our executive producer is Dr. Vivian Dix. Until next week, I'm your host, Matt Mayo. Let's go, Red Wings!